Good morning, everyone. We begin in Tunisia this morning, where, as you'll recall, the abdication and exile of leader Ben Ali over the weekend has produced a vacuum of leadership inside Tunisia. And the latest government, a national unity government created only yesterday, looks like it's showing some signs of coming apart. Three ministers have withdrawn. People in Tunis are protesting, saying there aren't enough new faces in this government. They want a complete separation from the old regime and the old party. We were talking just a moment ago with Kristen Chick, who's a correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor, who was saying that people on the streets are endorsing the support of the police and the military, who are independent of the government, but that there is an insistence on a restoration, if we can even say restoration, or a move to democracy, which is, in a sense, historically unheard of in Tunisia. Joining us also on the line from Oxford in the UK is Professor James McDougall, who's a historian on North Africa at Oxford University. Professor, good morning.
Good morning.
You know, we've seen so many times in the last 30, 40 years where events transpire on the ground and all of a sudden it's as though a time machine went off and we're transported back to another moment in history. I remember when the Balkans began to fall apart and Yugoslavia dissolved. All of a sudden, we were looking at the end of the Ottoman Empire, and historical forces that had seemed to be dormant were suddenly active. In North Africa, it's not the Ottoman Empire so much as it is 1956 and the Algerian independence, which transformed the politics of North Africa. Can you trace all the sorts of forces that are in play as briefly as you can in North Africa as Tunisia takes these steps towards democracy?
Sure. Well, that's a big commission. But I think basically what we have to bear in mind that what's going on now is, you know, history kind of telescoped into a very, very, very short space of time. Since the beginning of January, Tunisia has certainly gone through a number of changes that no one would have expected the country to be able to take in several years, let alone several weeks. The nearest historical precedent to what's happening now was what happened back in 1984. In Tunisia. I mean, I think that's the most recent history that's really most significant here. In 1984, there were major popular riots, protests against rising cost of living, rising cost of staple foodstuffs, and so on. And that was the first indication, really, of a bit of a crisis in the legitimacy of the Tunisian government, which had ruled the country under the president Bourguiba since independence in 1956. But at that time, those protests were repressed by the police and the security services, and it took 3 years for regime insiders to decide that President Bourguiba could no longer hold on to control, that he was no longer legitimate, that he was no longer able to exercise his presidential prerogatives, and to remove him. And, of course, what's happened this time is that similar kinds of protests, again, harnessing very fundamental dissatisfactions, popular disaffection with the regime, but prompted by economic difficulties, have convinced regime insiders that the president needed to go. But this time it's happened within 3 weeks.
And is there any popular mythology or memory of the 1950s in Tunisia that would be relevant today?
I mean, to a certain extent, you know, some of the things that people are commenting within Tunisia and Tunisians talking in the international media, some of the things they've been saying have been, you know, ever since 1956, we've been waiting for a genuine liberation. Ever since 1956, you know, we got rid of the French, but then we were oppressed by a single-party authoritarian post-colonial state under Habib Bourguiba. That came to an end in 1987. We thought we were going to have freedom and openness and democracy and accountability and dignity then. And all of those promises turned out to be false. And we got the authoritarian presidency of Ben Ali. Now, finally, we're realizing the freedom that we've never had. I mean, I think, you know, people kind of tend to look back on the past with a certain degree of nostalgia. We have to remember that in 1956, Bourguiba himself was enormously popular, that the achievement of independence was largely credited to him and to his deft diplomacy with the French. He was enormously popular and very legitimate to begin with, but he simply hung on too long. In 1987, when Ben Ali came into power, he was also welcomed by most Tunisians as a change from what had become an ailing authoritarian leadership, but he himself became an elderly authoritarian leader.
Professor James McDougall is a North African historian at Oxford University with a great history lesson of everything that's in play from really the mid-50s when Tunisia became independent from French colonial rule. Professor, hold on. Kristen Chick, live in Tunis, correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. Do you have a sense that people are evoking symbols and rhetoric from the 1950s and the 1980s in talking about what's to happen now?
You know, many of the protesters coming out on the street are young people who may not have been alive then or have clear memories of that time. The protests are by no means restricted to young people. There are people of all ages and all walks of life. But it, you know, Tunisia has a very large youth population, and many of those who are out today and in the past 3 weeks wouldn't have remembered many of those events.
Are there models regionally, for instance, the Islamic Revolution in Iran, for instance, or Muslim Brothers in Egypt, as to sort of assembling an opposition at all, or is it pretty much homegrown in Tunisia? Professor McDougall?
What's happening in Tunisia is definitely homegrown. I mean, we shouldn't be. I mean, Kristen's absolutely right that, you know, about 55% or something of the Tunisian population now is under 30 years of age. So I don't think we should be looking at kind of deep history to explain what's happening here. This is a result of frustrations and resentments of a young population who have not been able to find their place in a government in a country which is ruled by a closed and authoritarian clique. What's similar between Tunisia and other countries in the region is that many of these frustrations are shared. But in other countries in the region, say, I mean, in Iran in the 1970s or in Egypt more recently, there have been very strongly institutionally structured political oppositions to channel and to take control of massive popular uprisings. In Iran in 1979, it was ultimately the Islamic Revolution, although there were many other components to the movement that deposed the Shah. Everybody from the very radical secular left through to the very conservative religious right. In Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood has been a very powerful, significant political movement. In Tunisia, there is no single institutionalized political opposition party.
And that makes it unique. Professor James McDougall, historian of North Africa at Oxford University. Kristen Chick of the Christian Science Monitor, is this government going to hold?
It's hard to tell at this point. I think it will really hinge on how big these protests get today and the next few days and how many people are just not going to stand for this. Mm. You know, one thing people have told me is we have a choice now. We can say no.
And we're going to be watching on the streets of Tunis, which is where it will be decided. Kristen Chick, correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor in Tunis.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.